The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, this is Paco Romaine, and you're listening to the premier podcast about documentaries, SupDoc. And today on our show, I talk to Bay Area comedian and baseball coach Ben Colina about the 2018 Netflix documentary Screwball. Screwball recounts the high-profile doping scandal that rocked Major League Baseball. This entertaining doc takes us into the surreal Miami underworld that provided performance-enhancing drugs to Alex Rodriguez, Manny Ramirez, and other star players. They say South Florida is a sunny place for shady people, and this is certainly true of steroid peddler Anthony Bosch. While Bosch's medical credentials may be lacking, his storytelling skills are first rate. The documentary plays like a Coen Brothers movie, but also raises serious questions about doping and ethics in sports. My guest today is comedian Ben Colina. Ben had his first experience getting laughs at the expense of visiting outfielders in bleacher seats of the Oakland Coliseum. Ben is co-producer of the popular weekly comedy showcase at the Nightlight in Oakland and is a regular at the Punchline in San Francisco and Sacramento. And now, here's my talk with Ben. So I am here with Bay Area comedian, Mr. Ben Colina. Hello.
Hey.
Yes.
I stepped on your hello there.
You did. That's fine.
My bad.
You can, there'll be a lot of step-ons. I have a feeling this entire, maybe move the mic a little closer.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
Yeah, just
there
a little
we go.
Closer. And we're talking about the 2018 Netflix documentary. Would you call this true crime?
I think it does go between true crime and it touches a lot of bases for me. Yeah.
Hey, that's a pun.
It touches a lot of bases.
Yeah. So I'm going to call this a true crime doc. So the 2018 true crime documentary Screwball from Netflix, directed by Billy Corbin, who had did the Cocaine Cowboys. Did you see that?
I didn't watch. I'd seen some of them, but I don't know if I've ever sat down and watched a full one, because I know it's like a series of documentaries.
Yeah.
And I do enjoy those kind of like, you know, gritty drug dealing crime documentaries, but this one definitely had a little bit of a different feel in terms of I love the thing about, we were talking about it earlier, about the having the reenactments played by children.
Yes,
I thought was just perfect.
At first I was like, this is the kitschiest. I didn't like it.
Yeah,
I gotta admit, I didn't like it. I was like, I don't like this. I don't know what's happening, and I'm confused that there are children doing the reenactments of adults.
Yeah,
but then as the doc goes on, I'm like, oh, okay,
yeah,
I get it.
Because they're all such kind of like childish adults.
Yeah.
You know, like you got the Manny Ramirez needing to be read a bedtime story.
Oh my God.
And it's, they're all just very, very like, you know, for lack of a better word, just dumb, ego-driven people. And then the Porter guy is just like this like sad, lonely child that just will do anything if someone will pay attention to him, and he ends up being the like undoing of the whole thing. You know?
Yes, that is true. Okay, so we'll try to take this if we can step by step, which is hard because there's a lot of moving pieces to this documentary. But let's talk about you, and you're a big baseball fan.
Yeah,
matter of fact, I think you have is that a Doc Ellis?
The Doc Ellis shirt.
That's
I wore today
awesome.
For this. Yeah,
a pitch and a no-no.
Pitch and a no. Got a no-no going.
Damn, that's a great documentary.
Yeah, that's another really good one. But yeah, I grew up playing baseball all the time in Livermore, California, up until about ninth grade when my arm didn't feel good anymore and I had to stop doing it. But yeah, our claim to fame is that it's the hometown of Hall of Famer Randy Johnson, the big unit.
Livermore, California.
Livermore, California, Livermore High School. I went to Granada, but I actually heard that he went to Granada, but Granada didn't have a baseball team yet and he played at Livermore. So I don't know if that's true, but I know he played at Livermore, and I heard that he played in my little league, which he must have been a giant little leaguer.
He must have been like 7 foot tall in like fourth grade. I always thought he was a Texan. He just seems like a Texan
to me.
He's
California.
I didn't know that. Yeah. And he's like Bay Area, too.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought the big unit was like a Texas dude for some reason.
Yeah, I think everything about his game feels like Texas.
Yeah.
He's this big, stern-looking guy that throws, you know, 99 miles an hour,
right,
you know?
Right.
But yeah, he's from the deep East Bay slash Valley, Livermore, California.
And you were a pitcher.
I was left-handed pitcher. I didn't have anywhere near that kind of velocity.
Yeah.
But I was like a curveball pitcher.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was your specialty?
Yeah. That's how, also how I hurt the elbow. That's how that works out sometimes.
That will do it.
Yeah.
Do you have to have Tommy John surgery?
I mean, I at that point, I didn't really look into anything like that because I was in the ninth grade and I already kind of felt like I wasn't going to make it to the majors.
Right, yeah.
So I was just kind of moved on to other things
at that
point.
If there was any sport I would play, looking back now, because I played football and basketball, I would probably, baseball, you can play till you're like 60.
Yeah.
And you make lots of fucking money. You rarely get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the sport.
Well, and I think the thing too is like sometimes you have catchers are at risk for head injuries and those can mess you up bad. But most baseball players, the worst thing you hurt is your arm. And like I hurt my arm pretty bad, but it still doesn't affect my life at all.
Right. You know? Yeah.
It's not like there's a lot of things. I mean, I coach baseball currently and I can still throw batting practice and do all that stuff.
Can you say where you coach?
I will say high school. I coach at high school.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are you a position coach or are you a head coach?
I would say more of like a bench coach. I'm like, yeah. So I'm coaching first base, throwing a lot of batting practice, hitting a lot of fungo. And that's I think one of the things to bring back to the doc about like Tony Bosch is that, you know, from my experience, once you can't play baseball anymore, there's, if you really love it, there's still part of you that just like, I would just do anything, like let me cut the grass, like anything to just be around it.
Right.
And coaching has done that for me, and somehow being a fake doctor did it for him, you know, but that gave him like the access to kind of be a part of baseball. You
right,
know?
Right.
And I think that was the thing that kind of did him in. He probably could have been a fake doctor selling the same drugs to just rich people in Florida. And because the culture of Florida and the fake doctors, he would have gotten away with it forever, but he got into baseball and that's what I think got him caught up.
Right. And he wasn't a fake doctor. He was an unlicensed physician.
Yeah.
He makes
that clear, but they also kind of pour a little salt on that too.
A lot of salt.
He went to the Belize School of Performing Arts and Medicine.
Yes, those are two go very well together.
he could do some clinical trials and maybe some improv workshops. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I'm going to need a cancer and a body part.
Yeah, you know he got his degrees in Belize when he keeps yes-anding your diagnosis.
Right. It seems like that's what he was doing for people that were coming in because, like, this guy's straight out of a fucking Martin Scorsese film.
Yeah, he's just such
Tony
an amazing
Bosch.
Character. Yeah. I mean, just one of those guys that's, like, everything you imagine about, like, fraudulent Florida everything, like fast talking, you know,
he
troublemaker.
And also he's like one of those kind of guys that seems to have no like sadness about what he did or his part in it. He was just kind of like, this was a lot of fucking fun. I did a lot of coke.
Yeah.
You know, did a lot of dancing.
It's I love my favorite. I think the peak of the child reenactments was the scene where they're in the nightclub and there's a kid impersonating Pitbull on the stage and they're running around looking for a vial of A-Rod's blood.
That's insane.
It's just amazing.
It's one of those docs, I think, you were like, if half of this is true, it's still insane.
Yeah.
You know, and I imagine that's mostly true. I don't know why he would make anything up at this point. You know?
Well, there's also a thing too, I think, with Bosch where you can tell that he's so into the notoriety and the fame of it all that he's really not going to like hold back his stories. Like anything that makes him look important, he's going to put in there.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't realize that it makes him look bad, you know, he's definitely like, he wants to be known, you know, and that's kind of like his he's got a lot of downfalls, but that's part of it too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He does seem like one of those kind of characters. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of those like weird Florida documentaries, like The Legend of Cocaine Island. You know,
I watched that one. That one was amazing.
It's just like, come on, what the fuck is happening here? But like, yeah, Tony Bosch is like ripped out of any of like the Scorsese, like Godfather kind of stuff.
Cause he's
such like a, but he grew up in privilege. Like his parents were physicians,
yeah.
You know, and wasn't like his uncle or his grandpa was like a famous anti Castro terrorist or something?
He like fired a rocket launcher at like a ship or something. That was why I was glad I rewatched this, because that was another thing. I was like, oh, I forgot about that. His dad was like anti-Castro, and I think, or something like that.
I think he was an anti-Castro terrorist.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. And he fired a missile at like a
bazooka
trading ship
at a Polish ship, something or other. Yeah, that's just insane.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Miami?
Never. I definitely would like to check it out for a couple days, not just from seeing this documentary, but from my understanding of it. But a couple days feels like it would be about enough.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go to Miami. I hear it's a lot of fun, but it's kind of small. I don't know. Yeah. And it seems like a lot of this kind of craziness is what goes on in like all of the strip clubs of Miami, or not strip clubs, I meant strip malls rather.
Strip malls.
Strip clubs too. I mean, like,
they probably all have strip clubs and strip malls.
I would imagine they do.
I definitely have the expectation that they would all have tanning businesses, which again seems insane for the Sunshine State, but they go into that.
Ah, that's funny. Yeah, there's so many tanning booths and tanning beds. Well, So we're introduced, you know, it takes a while. So we're introduced to Tony Bosch, mm-hmm. who he is, what he's done with his life, the fact that he was kind of, he was into baseball. He wasn't very good at it, but he also wasn't a very good student.
Yeah.
You know, like he wasn't that smart. He mm-hmm. wasn't that ambitious. So he decides he wants to follow in the family business. So he goes to Belize, the only English speaking country in Central America,
mm-hmm.
To get a medical license, an MD, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like a technically a medical license that's like not valid in the U.S.
Yeah, right.
But a license.
That's
a piece of paper.
It made me kind of scared, because like of all the clinics I've been in, now I'm like, man, I've seen people with just like doctor embroidered on their white coat and some stethoscopes just been like, they must be a doctor.
Well, and it's funny because they do kind of touch on it in the movie. But one of the biggest like kind of drug lab steroid scandal before this was the Balco scandal, which that all happened in the Bay Area, and that involved a lot of like A's and Giants players and a lot of like, you know, Bay Area athletes. Florida definitely seems like the peak anti-aging place.
Yeah.
It just seems like that's what people are going there for.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure you got clinics like that all over the place.
Let's talk about the Balco thing, because like I remember when all that was going down, and I remember when Barry Bonds was just knocking mm-hmm. balls out of the fucking park.
Yeah.
You know, left. And he had like a 70 home run mm-hmm. season, a 72 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing that to me has always been interesting about steroids in baseball is that like the who benefited the most from it, you know? And as much as the league tries to like distance itself from it and like be on top of it and be like, we're super against it, the league made a ton of money off of that. Like McGuire and Sosa kind of saved baseball. And I think even now they're like, okay, we have this very stringent policy that we're proud of, except for the time that Bosch figured out how to beat it. But you get to the other end of that, and it's like now they're just juicing the balls. It's finding different ways to get the home runs that you want,
because
good for attendance. It's good for Sports Center. It's good for the sport to have guys hitting huge home runs all the time.
I mean, like, it's entertainment. It's sports. So mm-hmm. why not let people juice? Why not let people use HGH and...
That was kind of the thing before, like, and that's why it was funny to me that people were so, you know, adamant about demonizing Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire, because they really didn't break the rules of baseball at the time they were doing it, because baseball didn't have any rules regarding those substances. So how could they break them? So and then everyone's to be like, oh, well, you guys were cheating. But I mean, there was kind of this laissez-faire attitude up until like the Balco thing, where they started like really cracking down on it.
But what repercussions did Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire have? Did anything? I don't know my baseball history that well.
Never any official repercussions, but the repercussions that they did have was, I think, that probably that they are not as marketable. They're not as able to make money off of their names post baseball. Their legacy is probably not as appreciated as maybe it should be, because they're seen as like tainted. But all of that was stuff that they were doing before the rules had changed and before it had been addressed, you know. It was kind of like an open secret. Like, I'm sure a lot of people knew. I mean, they talk about it in the movie when Canseco was playing for the A's back then in Boston, and fans were chanting steroids at him. He'd turn around and he'd flex at him.
Yeah.
So everyone knew that, like, yeah, this guy's look like wrestlers for a reason. There's something going on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, some of those guys were like scrawny little baseball mm-hmm. players, and then all of a sudden they're just giant people. Like Barry Bonds. Yeah. Like, I remember skinny Barry Bonds.
Oh, Jason Giambi was the one I remember the most. When he right. first came up with the A's, he was like rail thin. And then by the time he left Oakland, he looked like a wrestling superstar.
That's
he was
right.
just jacked.
That's
you know?
Right. He yeah. was. Yeah.
And he was a guy. He's a guy who also got caught up in some things. And, you know,
was he a steroid guy?
Yeah. I don't know that he got suspended, but I know he got caught, I think, in a lab. I think it was maybe Balco that he got caught up with. But yeah, one of those he got.
And that's the Balco is the Bay Area mm-hmm. one. Yeah.
yeah.
And then they're most famously was Barry Bonds, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what. He yeah. and his trainer or something.
Yeah, what was it? They had calendars with his trainer, Greg Anderson, and they had his trainer, Greg Anderson, locked up in jail trying to get him to roll on Barry Bonds and decode these calendars so that they could implicate him. And Greg never flipped.
Whoa.
So Greg never flipped. So I got to think that, you know, Barry and him had some kind of arrangement, you know.
Maybe,
or, yeah.
Do you think so? Is Barry, are those guys ever going to be in the Hall of Fame? Are they?
I believe that. Well, Mark's kind of a tougher case because the injuries derailed his career and he didn't get to the career home run numbers yeah. to make him a shoe-in. But I definitely think Barry Bonds belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I think it's one of those things where it's the steroid era. That's just part of it.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's fair to punish individuals. And also I think that it's our baseball museum, you know, for the fans.
Mm.
And if you're a fan of my age, what's the appeal to go to it? All of your favorite players for the most part are like shunned and not represented yeah. there. So it's like, well, do
there's
I really need that
of,
museum? Because
right.
it represent the baseball
oh,
that I remember.
That's interesting.
You know?
And is that all Bud Selig? Is like, he is like kind of the doping.
And the writers, because the writers are who votes on the Hall of Fame. And I think they're the ones that have a lot of these like moral axes to grind.
Oh.
But I think it's absurd when you have like Ty Cobb in the Hall of Fame. And I could think of like five things that Ty Cobb is known for doing that were probably worse than, you know, taking an illicit substance to increase your performance. You
right,
know?
Right. Yeah.
And to make the game more entertaining.
Yeah. You know? That's interesting.
Yeah.
And, Ty Cobb was kind of famously racist and.
Yeah. He once, I think, went into the stands to beat up a guy with no arms.
Oh.
during a game. He was famous for sharpening the spikes on his
oh,
cleats
right, right.
and just but doing like flying kicks at people
that's
to
right.
like cut them with the spikes
oh,
and stuff.
My God.
He was a pretty notoriously foul human being,
right.
but he was a great baseball player. And when the time came to put him in the Hall of Fame, they didn't hesitate. You
Quick,
know?
Swiftly.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of guys that weren't great guys in the Hall of Fame that were great players.
I'm sure.
And so if you want to draw the line somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
I think it should be more in line with doing bad stuff to people instead of doing steroids.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that's an interesting take. I personally have no problem with people taking performance enhancing drugs. It's entertainment. I mean, it's like keeping people out of the Oscars an actor because they did cocaine. You know,
yeah.
it's like Jack Nicholson would never have won an Oscar if that was the same kind of litmus test.
And I think I remember a thing a few years back where there's this guy, Brian Roberts, who was like a second baseman for the Orioles. And there were these brand new Nike contact lenses, and he was one of the first players to get them. And he got these contact lenses and just had this amazing first half. And I remember kind of thinking, like, is that different from juicing? Because that's a medical thing that, like, you know, Lou Gehrig and Mickey Mantle didn't have access
right,
to. So
right.
it's an unfair advantage compared to the history of the game. But also it's just science and, you know, medicine and advancing. So.
Right.
You know, I don't. I think,
but you don't use a needle to put in contact lenses.
You don't use a needle
lenses.
To put in contact
yeah.
lenses. But yeah, that is, you know, there's a lot of stigma involved, especially when there are needles involved.
So this documentary Unravel, it's really funny. It's really irreverent. You
yeah.
know, this doc. I mean, obviously these doc makers, Billy Corbin and his crew, they have. How do they look at this? Like, what's your take on their take of this subject matter?
I remember the story when it happened, just because I'm a huge baseball fan. I remember all this stuff coming out. Like, they'll use the ESPN updates, you know, for guys getting suspended in
right.
the movie. And I remember, like, seeing all those.
Yeah.
And oh, shit, Manny's going down or whatever. Seeing what's underneath the story, it's so much crazier than I could have ever imagined. And I think that's kind of what they were looking at, is just this amazing slapstick story of like these weird, weird, fraudulent,
yeah.
crazy people just kind of going around back and forth. And then even like, you kind of think like MLB are like the adults in the room. And then once MLB gets involved, it'll be serious. And no, absolutely not. Like no. MLB is just all over the place.
Yeah.
And then one of the funniest things I found is that, like, you know, I remember at the time the Mitchell Report was getting, you know, Senator George Mitchell to come on and do this report about baseball, was going to put this real gravitas on it and this real like authority to it. And now, like, watching the movie and reading the news, like, George Mitchell is a name that just recently came out as someone who used to fly on Jeffrey Epstein's plane a lot.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
So maybe his name isn't worth as much as it should be.
It never is in politics and entertainment. I mean, people say one thing to another. I mean, they sign things and disagree with them in the next sentence. I know. It's pretty fucking disgusting. And there's like, what now that with the Mueller report, like all the reports, fuck all the reports.
Yeah.
You know, so many people are so entwined with this stuff.
And even I remember there was a guy on the A's at the time that was mentioned in the Mitchell report, a guy named Jack Cust, who was apparently in there and put down as like someone who had used steroids because someone else claimed to have had a conversation with him in a minor league locker room and claimed to have heard him say that he did it, but they didn't really have any evidence beyond that, and they still put him in that. And I kind of felt like that's hardly, you know, proof, you know.
That's grasping at some straws when you're like, well, someone said that they had talked to you in a locker room at some point. And yeah, that's not cool.
I think that a lot of players were, you know, not happy about it. And
sure.
But I think that's the same way of like if you have a thing that people have been getting away for a while, and then you like the first round of testing, they did it like penalty free just to see what was going on. And then they found out, like, I can't remember, like maybe 15% of major leaguers were doing something. And that's when they instituted that really strict plan. And that's actually the kind of the impressive thing about Bosch, is that Bosch was such a huge embarrassment for them because they had just implemented this tough plan that you wouldn't be able to beat. And he was like, no, I think I know how to beat it. I'm pretty sure we can beat it.
Yeah, that's the wily kind of thinking that, like, someone who's not that bright, I guess, but it was like smart enough to be like, let's just microdose. Mm-hmm. Let's just do some microdosing. And then
another passion of mine, big fan.
You got a lot of connections to this documentary.
You got a lot of tangential connections to this one, Big fan of
I was kind of surprised that, like, someone like Tony Bosch would actually sit for this, you know?
I think that he was overjoyed to sit for it. Someone's making a movie about him.
Yeah.
He gets to tell his side, you know, and I don't know. I wonder if he enjoyed watching it when it came out. That would be interesting to find out. But I'm sure he was delighted at the opportunity to be the center of
attention. It doesn't make him look bad in a weird way.
It doesn't make him look especially bad.
Right.
It makes him look like just this kind of creature of circumstance and environment that exists in Florida. Right. He's just kind of like an alligator of medical fraud that they have in Florida. They just have him all over the place, and, you know.
Right.
He's maybe not even a particularly nasty one.
Right, yeah. I think the MLB is who comes away looking the worst in all of this, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the craziest thing about it is the guy who was overseeing, who really had his hands in the investigation at the time, was Rob Manfred.
Right.
Who is currently the commissioner of baseball.
Dude, at the end when they say that, when they're like, Bud Selig gets out, and then that dude steps up because, huh, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Good corporate guy.
Well, and I think that was part of it, because really Selig if anyone should be tarred and marred by steroids in baseball, it should be Selig, because he's the one that let it get to this out of control point, and then had to try and do these hasty things to fix it, and a lot of blaming the players, you know, for things that were just kind of permitted, you know,
and hasty and lots of money. I mean, like, so these guys go down to Florida with basically bags of cash, like, trying to get evidence, and that's when this doc really starts heating up. That's when it starts getting fun.
Yeah, you have like the MLB paying people for evidence and paying Tony Bosch and paying pretty much anyone they can get to get what they want.
And in comes our man Porter Fisher. Man, this guy, I don't know. It's so awesome. Like the fact that like all this happened because Porter Fisher was basically pissed he wasn't paid back some money.
$4,000. $4,000. And Tony was spending what? he's spending more than that, I think, a week on cocaine.
At least.
And he couldn't just pay back Porter Fisher and keep all this, you know, going.
Dude, if someone knows where the bodies are buried, you pay them yeah. their $4,000. It's so dumb. Yeah. It's such greed and, like, egotism and, like, narcissism where they're just like, you're just a little nobody.
Yeah.
And, like, but you gave us your money and we didn't say we're going to be able to get, you know, like, it's
so dumb.
Well, and
also, like A-Rod doesn't have $4,000 lying around.
I know,
like,
dude.
If it was a real problem, you couldn't go to A-Rod and be like, look, this guy's causing me problems. I got to pay him off. And you know, that end of story.
Yeah. And that's what they ended up doing anyways. Yeah.
A-Rod probably sneezes $4,000.
Oh my God. Easily. Dude, the story about the all white apartment with the white floors and then the centaur thing. Yeah. Had you heard that before?
Oh yeah. Yeah. A lot of those A-Rod stories are out there. It's, you know, the funniest thing to me about all this is that at the time when he was playing, when all this was going on, A-Rod was the biggest villain in baseball.
Right.
And if you look at it now, he's on ESPN, and all his career he played for the Mariners, Rangers, Yankees. As an A's fan, I booed him his entire career.
Yeah,
every team he played on was a team right. that we hated, and I especially didn't like him even before the steroid stuff. But watching him on TV, he's fun. He's
yeah.
kind of cool. He's kind of a good guy. He's totally rehabilitated his image. People like him now.
Right.
He's the ultimate 90s super couple with J-Lo now.
Right, right.
So it's like A-Rod's doing pretty well for himself. Whether or not they let him in the Hall of Fame, it seems like he's fine. You know?
Yeah. I mean, he had some smart people around him. Like, he knew what he was doing. Like, the guy doesn't seem like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, he seems like a complete narcissist.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. He loves him some A-Rod.
A-Rod loves himself some A-Rod. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure. And I mean, he's basically got to own New York. Like
yeah.
when you play in New York City, you uh-huh. know, like, and you're a superstar, like how great would it be to have New York as your like play
oh,
area?
Yeah.
Like that's,
although he did, I think because of the expectations in New York, I don't think he ever quite had the relationship with New York that like a Derek Jeter had.
Oh, okay.
Because they won so much in the 90s and he was the best player in the game. They got him and they expected to win a bunch with him and they only actually got one World Series with him.
Got it.
And so I think with A-Rod, there was always this kind of feeling of like, yeah, he's great in the regular season, but he's not great in the playoffs.
Right,
and,
right, right.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Jeter is like Mr. Yankee, right?
Yeah. I another player I hate with a passion.
Yeah, yeah, understandable.
I was at the A's game when he did that that flip thing. And
me too.
I still think that Jeremy was safe, but that's just
uh-huh. me. Yeah, I was there. I was there as well. I remember that play. I remember him running towards the base and flipping it over and was never an I was a Tigers fan. I grew up a Tigers fan, and then when I moved here, I became a Giants fan. But they sucked so bad when I first moved here that like I would go over to the across the bridge and watch some A's games just to like see what else was happening. And that team was good.
Yeah,
that A's team was good. Billy Bean.
They're kind of good again right now.
I know.
I've been enjoying them. Yeah.
Yeah. You must be happy.
Yeah, it's good. I love Chappie. That's my favorite player right now.
That's
Matt
Chapman.
He's really something to watch.
Uh huh. That's awesome. I haven't really tuned in this year because when the Giants suck, I don't really watch.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of one of those kind
of
people.
They had a moment a couple weeks ago where they were kind of winning games.
They did some rallying.
Yeah.
We were consuming so much product that at times I had to go to the black market to purchase these products. And I would purchase it from Oogie. Oogie referred a patient named Yuri Sukar to me. I had no idea who he was. He put in his occupation personal assistant or something like that, but not to whom. Every visit, this guy would wear this Yankee paraphernalia, you know? He had a World Series ring on. I couldn't ignore that thing, it was huge. I tell him, do you have anything to do with the Yankees? And he says, yeah, my cousin's in the Yankees and I'm his personal trainer. My cousin wants to meet with you. It was a boutique hotel in Tampa. He knocked on the door and when the door was open, it was A-Rod, it was Alex. The first words out of his mouth was, I want whatever Manny was taking.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So let's talk Porter Fisher. Yeah. So we've seen this guy. He's big, he's bulky, he looks like every Southern Florida kind of guy. And he gets involved because he loves the tanning place, mm-hmm. and he wants to be their marketing person for Belco. Yeah. Or, I mean, not Belco.
Biogenesis.
Yeah. Like, he's like, oh, there's no ads. I don't see any ads. And not realizing that everything he's been doing has been illegal.
Illegal drugs,
it's
yeah.
It's so dumb.
I love the analogy they make in the film where it's like if you went to like a Coke dealer, like, right. Hey, why don't you advertise for this stuff? It's great. It's making me energy, power, like
24/7. Yeah.
Let me take out some billboards.
And then he goes to the CFO and he's like, I have money. I can pay for this myself. And he's like, oh, you've got money.
Yeah.
It's like, so we find out that Porter had been hit riding his bike by a guy who then paid him a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Talk about seeing a fucking pigeon walk in.
I watched everything about this character. I feel like if you could make this movie as like a Coen Brothers movie,
right.
He would be the main character. He'd be the center of all of it because he just kind of stumbles into everything.
Right.
He's just kind of constantly so earnest that he's just so easy to double cross.
Dude, that's
by everyone.
That is perfect. to say that, make this into a Coen. I just met Ethan Coen a couple weeks ago at Outside Lands.
Oh, really?
Fucking amazing. I didn't know who it was. Uh-huh. After he walked away, this guy came up to me and was like, that was Ethan Coen. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. But you're right. This would be a perfect. Yeah. It's so bumbling and so like the Coen brothers always take these like idealistic, like high-minded people who are actually buffoons.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't understand that they're buffoons and they do buffoony things.
Yeah.
Buffoonish.
There's something he kind of reminds me of like a kind of sadder version of like the Brad Pitt character in Burn After Reading.
Oh yeah.
Like a little bit. Like,
wait, who? The Porter Fisher?
Porter Fisher, like a sadder, kind of dumpier version of that guy.
Well, you know who? Okay, so we do play a game on this podcast called Cast This Doc.
Yeah.
Where we cast an actor that would play these people in the biopic. So Tony Bosch, are you familiar? Did you watch The Sopranos?
Yeah.
Do you remember Little Carmine?
Was he the guy with the coif?
Little Carmine was played... He was the son of the Don, Carmine the Don from Florida, and he dies, and then Little Carmine becomes like the boss. Man. But the guy who played Little Carmine looks just like this dude, and I actually had to look it up earlier because I was trying to remember the dude's name, but he looks just like him. Let me just type this in real quick. But yeah, it's pretty this guy, isn't it?
Oh yeah, he does look like him.
It's like Ray Abruzzo or something that plays him. But like, right? That's
he definitely looks like him.
Yeah, Little Carmine. So, anyways, so and then I think for Porter Fisher, we should just get Brad Pitt, jack him up a little bit.
You know what? Brad Pitt, but he'd have to do like the Christian Bale where he like gets like kind of fat.
Oh right.
A little bit pudgy for it.
Did you see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
I haven't yet, actually.
Fucking Brad Pitt. He's so good in it.
Yeah.
He's so fucking handsome.
I've been watching Mindhunter, and I saw the scene with Manson. I hear that guy plays him in that movie.
He does.
And just based on that, I kind of want to see it, because that guy was really good in Mindhunter.
Yeah, dude. Mindhunter kicked my ass this season. I liked everything except for, I don't want to do any spoilers, because it's such a great show. There's one thing in that show that I fucking hated.
Yeah.
It really pissed me off, but I won't say it, because it'll be it's a spoiler. But and the guy that plays Son of Sam.
And he actually kind of looks like Tony Bosch.
Oh,
he could
maybe
play Tony Bosch.
He
could
play little Tony Bosch.
He could do Tony Bosch.
Fucking Tony Bosch. So, and then there's always the voice of reason in these kind of documentaries, and that is the Tim Elfrink, the Miami New Times reporter that apparently ended up writing a book about this. And we see him once in a while, or he's kind of like, so we got these two idiots, and, you know, like Porter Fisher is this naive fucking pigeon, the mark that comes into the den of these guys, and like they just take them. I mean, they understand what they got, you know.
I also love how like your other voice of reason, other than the newspaper guy, is the Florida Department of Health investigator
guy,
who you find out works for the Florida Department of Health because he was a Baltimore cop,
right,
and then got fired because he was like skimming drug money, and he got caught beating up an undercover cop.
Oh my God, dude.
So like even like your voice of reason, like your good guys that are on the side of the law, like, not that good.
Not that
a little
great.
Bit suspicious, you know?
It's just criminals all over the place.
Yeah. I mean Florida really just seems like a hell of a place.
Oh man. There's a reason it ends with duh.
Yeah. And they get the crazy-eyed governor in there for a little bit. You get to see some Rick Scott.
Dude, some Rick Scott. Why? Who? Like, how? How did he have a career?
I don't know.
I'm never understand. He seems so weird. And, like, he's got...
There's no charisma.
Zero. And you know he's hiding 1,000 skeletons.
They get into that he's kind of tied up in the medical fraud in Florida. He's definitely, like, he was arraigned in some kind of thing where he took the fifth, like every question, pretty much. And, like, yeah... And there's that great scene of him trying to speak Spanish. I'd never seen that before, but it's so good.
Yeah. They use some very awesome footage in this. They do a lot of quick edits to things. And that's what I like about this doc. It's very entertaining. It goes by really fast. Like, they don't sit on anything too long. And it's obviously, they're like, they know that these characters are a little, like, cartoonish and stuff. Mm-hmm. They kind of play up to that, you know?
It works in a big way. Actually, one of my favorite all-time baseball players pops up in this. Speaking of cartoonish, I love Bartolo Colon.
I was going to ask Colon you about that.
I follow him on Instagram. He's an amazing follow on Instagram.
Really? Currently?
Yeah, currently. Like, a lot of it, he just goes through and posts old photos of his playing days. But the other day, he posted just a photo of himself smiling from ear to ear, posing with the A's mascot.
Wow.
And just, like, all these random weird photos or photos of himself working out and, like, staying in shape. And he just looks like... Yeah, he's like built like a bowling ball.
Right.
You know?
He was a big guy when he was in shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was he a pitcher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a pitcher. He had a couple. Actually, they mentioned him being a Biogenesis guy and getting suspended when he was on the A's. And I remember when that happened, that was the year we made the playoffs a couple years ago. He got suspended.
Oh, it was just a couple years ago?
Yeah, just a few years ago, I want to say 2012, 2013 maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a 50-game suspension or one of those big-ass suspensions?
50-game.
That's crazy. What did A-Rod get? What was his? Was he a 50 or was he a season?
It was originally 210 games. It was over a season. Then it got knocked down because I think it was weird that he got caught doing the same things every. Well, it was actually his second time getting caught, though, so that's part of it. But and then he appealed it and played while appealing it, and eventually it got upheld, but it did get knocked down from 210. Mm. I think he ended up missing about a season.
Interesting. Yeah. So Tony gets Porter to give him $4,000 in this scope of things is not a lot of money to invest back into Biogenesis. And Porter's like, I want my money, and Tony keeps avoiding him. And so finally Porter's like, listen, I know where the bodies are buried. If you don't pay me, I'm going to take this and like crack it open and tell people about it. And then he ends up, this is the part I didn't quite understand. Did he steal? He stole like all these files. So they made
just
it
notebooks.
Seem like,
yeah.
It made it seem like he had access and could take them, but he obviously didn't have permission.
Yeah.
He took all of the notebooks that Dr. Bosch.
I think it was just a leverage play. They weren't taking him seriously. They weren't giving him his money. He's like, well, now I have this.
Right.
So you better give me my money. And even then, they didn't. Like, yeah. It's really when they should have just given him the money.
I know.
Trying to stay, you know, out of the public.
Well, it's because he wanted like a couple points on the back end because he was like, add another 1,200 or something.
Oh, yeah, because he wanted like interest.
Yeah, he wanted interest.
And even still, like, would that make it like $6,000 or whatever? Like,
maybe. I don't even know if it was that much.
That's still probably less than he was spending a week on drugs at that time.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's.
It's so dumb. And so they don't. So then Porter goes to Tim, the guy we're just talking about, the Miami New Times reporter, and says, hey, I got this fucking thing I've been, you know, like I know about. And then the reporter's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Let's look at this thing.
Yeah. And it's because then, the other amazing thing that once it comes out that I didn't realize is they talk about how like At first, it was kind of like really heavy on A-Rod, and then like Yahoo does their own story, and they get information that links the current National League MVP Ryan Braun to this scandal as well. And it comes out after the fact that like A-Rod's people were the ones, because they already had a copy of the book somehow, and they leaked Braun's name to kind of take the heat off of A-Rod.
And that was his teammate,
and also his teammate Cervelli, Francisco Cervelli, who's like A-Rod's like the highest paid player in baseball, and Cervelli's making like, you know, the league minimum.
That's so gross. Yeah. Dude, that's so gross.
Yeah.
A-Rod's willing to like throw one of his own teammates under the bus who's like making no money.
Yeah.
Just to get the heat off of him.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is so fucking gross. Yeah,
he did a lot of
A-Rod just seems like such a gross piece of shit, doesn't he?
Yeah. It's weird because I do feel like his image has been somewhat rehabilitated from being on TV a bit, but he definitely look at the way that like that he handled himself with like all these allegations and stuff, and he definitely was like strong arming people,
right?
And, you know, throwing people under the bus,
right?
And,
right, right. Well, publicly he's like, "This is the new A-Rod. This is the new me. I'm so sorry." But privately, he's just like dicking people around and throwing people under the bus, and like, I mean, he's got enough money he could buy the right PR people to help put his like image back together.
You know, I can't remember. There was a story somewhere, I think it was like in Deadspin recently, that he was like in this house in New York in the bathroom, and somehow his bathroom has like a giant open window, and someone took a photo of just A-Rod sitting on the throne looking at his phone.
Oh, wow.
Like, I don't know how.
That's pretty amazing.
I'm sure if you Google A-Rod bathroom, you can find it.
Yeah, that.
If you want to.
Who, like, is there anyone else who's gone through that much exposure for doing something bad and kept like come out clean, kind of like A-Rod has? Like, what other sports figures? Like, I mean, Michael Jordan did a lot of gambling.
Yeah, Jordan did a lot of gambling. I'm trying to think of who's been really like tarnished and kind of brought it around. Bonds, not so much, but I think Bonds isn't really Bonds. I don't think. Cares about being liked as much by people. I think he's comfortable with his legacy in the game, and and he understands people are debating it, but I don't think it keeps.
Well,
him
he
up
also
at night.
Like famously didn't he have his own like section of the locker room? He had his own like recliner and like didn't even want to like fraternize with the other dudes, right? Wasn't that the thing?
It's hard to say how some of it's overblown, but yeah, some guys said he was real prickly. Other guys said he was a good teammate, but he's definitely. You know, there's a lot of stories about him being mercurial and difficult. You
well,
know?
Like Tiger Woods. I mean, he went through his own.
Oh, yeah, Tiger Woods.
And now he's on
winning the Masters again.
And now he's back on the good side. But that was like a personal, with him and his wife kind of, it wasn't like doping or something, you know?
Well, he was taking all those pills and trying to drive or whatever.
I think he had some vodka in him and stuff. One of the things that like I was shocked about that I guess just blocked out was that in the State of the Union, George Bush talked about steroids. When they show that footage, I'm like, he took time out of the State of the Union to talk about steroid use in baseball. It just seems so quaint now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's I think a thing that like seeing Bush again is like a weird trip down memory lane right now.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people are like, oh, Trump, this is all so like new and horrible. And, you know, I can't ever imagine everything being this bad. And like even some people are like, oh, Bush used to be good. But you remember, like, Bush was terrible.
It was horrible.
It's terrible.
I like even in the documentary, it takes its swipe at Bush and Trump by saying the second worst president in his thing. Yeah.
But even like that's, I mean, the guy had at that point, he started two illegal wars that were still unfolding and people are dying all the time. But at the same time, he's a former baseball owner and he wants to be the commissioner maybe someday. So he's going to take time out of his State of the Union to try and clean up baseball.
It's weird when you see the footage. I mean, I actually stopped it and rewound it and watched it again because I was like, this is the strangest thing that he's like, and then we got to get rid of steroids in baseball. I'm like, what? That's such a weird thing for him to be concerned about.
Yeah, that's the thing. I do. There is something about Bush where he was like scary and bad, but It was really fun to watch him try and talk.
Yeah.
it was really fun to watch him just do battle with the English language.
Yeah.
He would do that thing where he would like start a sentence and then get a little bit behind the words, and then he'd get mad at all of the rest of the words of the sentence.
Yeah, he'd get all pissed off.
It was the one he was like, oh, well, you fool me once, and then, but you can't fool me again, is the point.
Yeah, he did the, what was his, strategery? Yeah.
So, oh, man.
Well, and he also left us with a giant $1 trillion deficit, as Republicans tend mm-hmm. to do. But and then I think like one of the most entertaining stories in this whole doc is the Manny Ramirez stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't know any of that stuff. All I remember about Manny Ramirez is his weird ass helmet.
Like, yeah, everything about Manny was strange.
He seems like a strange duck, man.
Yeah, he used to actually, I heard a story from someone who's a Red Sox fan that knew someone. Because you know how the Red Sox, right behind left field, they have that huge scoreboard?
Yeah.
And it's like an office in there. So they got a little computer, mm-hmm. and so they can check the scores and put the stuff up. And Manny used to just, in between innings during pitching changes, he would just walk in there and like take over the office and like use it as his personal break room. And I guess one time he was in using the computer.
Yeah.
During the break, just looking at stuff on the computer, and they looked at like, what was he looking at? I was like, looking at like porn or something.
Oh,
just
man.
Like during a pitching change.
That's insane. He is so odd. I don't really know much about Manny Ramirez. Like, I know like he was a great hitter, you know, yeah. And then he went, like they showed like he had 20 home runs in 2007 mm-hmm. and then like doubled it in yeah. 2008 or something. But
and he did have like a kind of concurrent with the time that he started working with Bosch, he did have this kind of late career renaissance that got him that like one more contract in LA before he kind of washed out of the league.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. Like they tell like one of the, I mean, they tell a lot of different anecdotes about Manny Ramirez, but one of them is the bedtime story. Like he needed to be told a bedtime story to go to sleep. Yeah. So Tony Bosch, we find out, goes on the road basically with Manny Ramirez. Mm. If he's in Boston, I'm in Boston. If he's in New York, I'm in New York.
Yeah.
I'm always a hotel room across, you know, from him. And sometimes I'd have to sit with him and tell him a bedtime story. It's just so fucking odd.
Again, it's one of those things though that like it's one of those moments where like the child reenactments feel right.
That's when like, it all yeah, makes
Manny
sense.
Manny needs a bedtime story.
Yeah, that's when it all makes sense. Again, when I first I was like, what is going on yeah. with these kids? It was just weird. But then as the it goes on, you're like, this is pretty fucking funny.
Yeah.
It's like an interesting way to, and then they also do the drunk history thing.
Yeah. Where they're basically doing the dialogue as read by the interviewer.
Right.
I think that's a really good touch. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. That was kind of fun. And it kind of, you know, makes the doc very watchable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very, I think without it, like you'd still have a great story.
Yeah.
There's still a great story there, but like the reenactment kid thing makes it kind of, you realize it's like everyone's just a kid in this thing. They're all a bunch of buffoons.
And I think it would lose some of the over the course of the story, it would lose some of the impact and the like insanity without some kind of like reenactment to break it up. If it's just people just telling the story, then, you know, it's not gonna be the same.
Right. And so then at one point we find Porter Fisher.
Mm.
I don't know why he tells one of the main gangsters, Oogie, that he's got files somewhere and he's bringing them back.
Yeah.
Like he trusts one of them for some, I can't remember.
I think that's just the thing. He just really is trusting in general and just never knows when to just zip it and not talk about something.
Right, right.
Because he has this really valuable thing and then he tells these people he has it and they know that he's going to get it. And then they go, hey, why don't you come by the salon? Why don't you come by and do a quick spray tan? I got some stuff I want you to try. And he's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that sounds great. I'll just park my car with this.
In the back.
In the back. Yeah. Just leave it in the lot. It'll be fine.
Oh, my God. What an idiot. And then he comes out and he's like, my car's been broken into. And, you know, and this, they're just playing him like a fucking.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, my God.
Right,
mine
just
too.
Now?
Like, oh, they got into my van. That's just like so. Oh, my God. It's so much. And then so they ended up taking all of his stuff. And then the great. Caper, like they're playing mm-hmm. two people, they're playing everyone against each other. They're selling everything back to A-Rod.
Yeah.
And then they're selling the photocopies of everything they sell to A-Rod to
MLB.
MLB.
So, yeah, they're making it like bandits in the middle. Because A-Rod's buying the evidence to keep it from the MLB, and then they're also duplicating the evidence and selling it to the MLB.
Oh,
and
my
the MLB
God.
Is, they make it sound like the MLB is just splashing money around everywhere. That it's just a bunch of ex-cops who are the MLB investigations task force, and they've just been given carte blanche to just go around and just bribe people to That's get anything amazing. They can get on A-Rod.
Jesus Christ. That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like Porter is just like, well, no, it's worth more than $5,000. Like, you know, you can't have this, you know? And then he ends up getting fucked.
Well, and then it comes out that, that whoever it was that broke into Porter's car to take those documents was definitely stealing them for someone so that they could sell them to MLB.
Right.
And at that point, you have like the MLB definitely involved in a crime.
Oh, right.
Like that's criminal.
That's a good point.
And and possibly even Manfred himself involved in a crime. But, you know, it'll never get looked at.
No.
Yeah.
And then like one of my, you know, of course, one of the most interesting points, they don't make it too much of a point in the documentary, but the only one to go to jail for anything
is the guy that broke in.
Is the black kid that they probably gave $500 to Blake. Well, actually,
didn't Bosch end up getting a little bit of time when it all came to an end, I think?
Oh, I think he did.
I think he did get a little bit, but I think it
was much.
Not much.
Yeah.
And it was just for like being a fake doctor.
Right.
Or whatever,
I'm sure he played tennis wherever he went. But this black kid who they gave a few hundred bucks to break into the cars to steal everything, he gets arrested and then sent to jail.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the guy who heads up the MLB thing gets a commissioner bump.
Yeah, gets a bump in salary. And it's funny because I can't remember who tweeted it, but I saw this tweet and I feel it very deeply. But somebody was like, quote tweet, the best rivalry in sports, and somebody's suggestion was Rob Manfred versus people who like baseball. I really do believe that. But you know, the funny thing about it is that like there's this posturing about how like baseball desperately needs fans and interest and money, but like if you look at the revenue of the sport, like everyone said, like steroids are tarnishing the game. But if you look back to like the revenue for the game as a whole, back when A-Rod signed his record contract, and you compare it to what it is now, the revenue is tripled.
Oh, wow.
So baseball is worth, as a sport to the owners, three times what it was 10 to 15 years ago. So whatever it is that's been going on with steroids and getting it in the media and getting it on TV, even if the numbers at the ballpark aren't what they want them to be, they're making so much money.
Oh, wow.
Meanwhile, the player salaries have not gone up,
right?
Have not tripled, you know?
Right.
Everyone talks about how much they are, but they've gone up maybe like 5-10%,
right,
if that, from A-Rod, you know?
Yeah.
So really it is like the owners and the sport is just, you know, they're just making a killing.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah. Owners always make a killing.
Yeah.
I was just listening to that 30 on 30 about Donald Sterling, the podcast.
I haven't seen that. Yeah. Or heard this, the podcast?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really fascinating.
That was a really wild story.
Yeah. That's a crazy story, especially as they are getting into all these particulars about him and all the fucking crazy ass shit he used to do. I mean, he was tanking the clips on purpose, you know. He was like wanting first round draft picks, so he was out in the press just being like, well, if we lose the last few games, then we get, like, you know, the pick we want. And fucking nuts.
I definitely think that sports owners always are shady.
They're all con men. It all just seems, I mean, I'm surprised. Well, Trump, he owned part of the XFL, right?
And actually, I think the funny thing is, if you want to talk about like how the world we live in would be different today, he got into the XFL because he always really, really wanted to be an NFL owner. But I think because he was so batshit insane that the league didn't really want to deal with him. There was a couple times, I think he tried to buy the Bills and they turned him down or whatever. And honestly, I think if you think about it, like if the NFL would have like let him into that rich kids club,
right,
he probably would have never run for president.
Easily.
He'd be doing that. You know?
If you're not going to own a sports team, you're going to want some other lofty thing like president or governor of New York. Park.
Well, and even still, look at how much, I mean, he's very egotistical and he devotes a lot of time and energy even to like he's running the country and he still wants to talk about The Apprentice. And I think a lot of the Kaepernick stuff is like, he just wants to shit on the league because they wouldn't let him in that club. And
yeah.
So he's just going to talk about the NFL a bunch and like, you know, just kind of go to war with the NFL because they wouldn't have him, you know?
He's such a baby.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And it is surprising that Kaepernick's not playing.
Yeah,
to this day,
it's insane.
It is insane.
Yeah,
I mean the guy went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
you know, like he'd only had like two seasons under his belt.
He has so many bad quarterbacks in the league.
Oh God, there's so many.
It's wild.
Pretty incredible. So this doc was better than I thought it was going to be, which was awesome because like at first I was like, I'm not sure I'm feeling it so much. And then the story ramps up and it's like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
As it twists and turns, it just kind of like, it definitely like, I knew the story and I was like, oh, a documentary about this story. I'll watch this. This will be something. And then as I got into it, it was just like, this story is so much crazier than I ever knew it was, you know?
Well,
like,
I don't think people remember it as much as the Belko story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, I thought they were connected.
Yeah.
I thought the Biogenesis thing came out of the Belko stuff. So that's one of the, I didn't realize how recent the Belko thing, I mean, the Biogenesis thing was.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think that's the thing. Like, I think in the Bay Area, Belko is the one that's remembered more because because so much of that story was broken by writers in the Chronicle. So it was all over the local media, because it was all the news was emanating out of the Bay Area. That one was more of like, It was a big deal, I think, for baseball fans because it was such a poorly timed, like, catastrophic black eye for their, like, newly minted, we have a testing policy now and it's got teeth and it's going to work and you're not going to be able to beat it.
Ironclad.
And then all these guys were beating it, you know? And even Bosch says maybe it's ego or maybe he's right, but he's like, my system never fucked up.
Right.
Never got anyone caught. Their compliance with my system got them caught.
It's
like when people weren't complying with the system when they were like microdosing on days when they shouldn't have been, that's when they got caught. And, you know, maybe he's right.
Yeah. I'm sure he is. I mean, that's part of it is you got to follow the fucking rules. You know, you got to follow the recipe.
Yeah.
And so what was it? Manny that dosed when he's on a day off and was that it?
That's according to Bosch, but also like Manny's not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
He's like, man, you know, he's not going to talk about it. There's nothing in it for him to talk about that.
Yeah. No, there wouldn't be.
Yeah.
That's pretty insane. Like I can't, that level of competition and like that certain level of sports and money and competition and stuff just seems like so otherworldly, especially when like you're at the top of your game and you're still looking for that one more inch, you know?
And I definitely think like, it's not to say that like it was a harmless thing that didn't affect anybody because definitely the victims of the steroid stuff in baseball were the guys that were pretty good, that were good enough and didn't do it and didn't get the opportunities to play at the higher level because they lost out to someone who was doing it. But I think the league tries to portray it that like the honor of baseball and the image of baseball has been tainted by it. But like baseball's worth three times as much as it was before we went through this.
Yeah.
So like, I don't think that like all these scandals keeping baseball above the fold of the sports page has necessarily been bad for baseball. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Like there was no such thing as bad press. Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm sure that it's maybe like some old timer types probably like have disparaging thoughts, but like other people are just like, well, this is just the way it is.
Well, I think it's been bad for those individual players, but it's been good for the game because more people are talking about the game and more people, you know, I think anytime you have debate and discussion about something, it raises interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's bad for like Canseco, Maguire, Sosa, Bonds, those individual guys, but it's good for the game as a whole, which is kind of weird, but I think it's true.
That is. Yeah. That is kind of odd. What else you've been watching? What other docs you've been watching?
Oh man, I told you about the one. It's the mini series, The Killer Ratings.
Yeah,
that was absolutely wild.
I watched it. It was nuts. I'm surprised that didn't get more attention. It's kind of buried in Netflix.
Yeah,
like if you get a chance to watch Killer Ratings, it's beyond comprehension.
It really is. Yeah. It's like horrific in a lot of ways, really.
It's very horrific.
Yeah.
It's insane that it was actually true.
Yeah. And even still, like it I mean, I've always kind of been interested. Like, there's another one called Mandabala that's like an older documentary about Brazil that I really like, but I've always found it to be like a really fascinating, like kind of like similar to America in how capitalist it is and how kind of like crazy it is, but also different in a lot of weird ways. And yeah, it's definitely a weird example of like the political stuff there, because you talk to people on either side of that scandal and nobody will admit anything.
Yeah.
Everyone's either 100% this guy did all this stuff, or 100% he was framed and he didn't do any of it.
Right.
And it's all like this like cult of belief, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you have kind of cult like leader types.
That's what we're dealing with right now.
That's exactly what we're dealing with.
Try convincing, you know, a MAGA person that Trump is insane. It's impossible.
You can't.
they're totally.
Well, sometimes I've had to even think about I'm like, wait, I remember when so many people were upset with President Obama and there were all these crazy conspiracies. And I was like, you're fucking nuts.
Yeah.
It's like, that's now how they feel about people like us or me, where, you know, because. And it's just a strange, strange world we live in. Yeah,
I read this book by Matt Taibbi years ago, The Great Derangement, and he talks about Americans as reality shoppers. Mm. That there's no uniform reality that we all live in together. We're all just kind of picking and choosing our reality and our set of facts that we want to live by. And I think it's definitely like crystallized to the point where I don't even like people can't even like talk to each other.
I agree 100%. Yeah. There's many different realities and many different facts or not facts, news or fake news. And that kind of plays into Screwball, the doc we've been talking about. If you get a chance, you don't even have to be a sports fan to enjoy this documentary, or a baseball fan.
If you like wild slapstick, Florida bullshit. This should be right up your alley.
this would be it. So definitely check out Screwball on Netflix. Ben, thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate you bringing this to me. And it's been fun talking about docs with you. When